Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's May the 4th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the Andersons from Delphi, Indiana. Bruce Bostard is away this afternoon. Dave Dickey will be along, too, with all the day's agricultural news. And then I'll tell you why you should not mud your corn in. Okay, so Emerson Nafziger will give you all those details. But I did the interview with the U of I Extension agronomist. It all comes up on this Friday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat at $4.82, up a penny this afternoon. July futures at $4.94 and 3/4, up a quarter. And September contract at $5.06 a bushel, up 1 1/2 cents. May corn futures at $3.81 and 1/4. They finished the day a penny and a half higher. July at $3.90 and 3/4, up 1 1/2. And December contract at $3.90 and 1/2. It finished up 3 1/4 for the afternoon. Soybean futures now nearby May contract at $7.33 and 1/2, down 1/4. July at $7.47 and 1/2, down 1/4. And November beans at $7.76 and 1/4, down 1/2 for the day. May bean meal futures at $196.50. They were up 180. May bean oil down 45 at $32.72. From the Mercantile Exchange, nearby feeder cattle at $107.15. They're up 20 cents for the day. June live cattle at $92.17 and 1/2. Up 45, and August futures at $90.87 and 1/2, 100 weight, finished 30 cents higher. May hogs, $75.25, up 30 for the afternoon. The outside markets finished the crude oil June contract, actually still trading, at $62 even. They were down $1.19 at the last tick. July at $63.80, off $1.15. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,262, and it's up just about 21 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana on a Friday afternoon. Mike, how you doing today?
Doing great, Todd. Thank you.
Yeah, we got a little drizzle happening here in our part of the world. What's things like near Purdue's campus?
A lot of progress made this week, it sounds like, Todd. I don't think the guys are super happy with the early week corn and what went in the ground at mudding your corn story you're going to have on sounds real appropriate for us for what we dealt with late weekend, early this week. But since then, it's improved pretty dramatically.
Yeah, you'll hear some pretty good numbers there. And that I did a couple of interviews with Emerson, one today, and I'll play one next week where he talks about 145 bushel average for the state of Illinois in this year. But he said that a little wryly, so we'll take that up a bit. Don't repeat that too often out loud, but we'll run and see what happens with that one. Say, tell me, in Chicago, the day's trade didn't really reflect what the weekly trade looks like. A pretty good week in Chicago. Corn futures up 17 cents this week in the May, December up 23. Soybeans were up 10 1/2 in the nearby May contract. November's up 9 3/4. What's this telling us?
Well, they definitely wanted to put more risk premium in, probably more weather-related and induced risk premium into the market this week. But like you said, today was a little bit like yesterday where the corn ran up and beans and wheat had that late-day sell-off, right before the 2 o'clock Eastern time period. That's when things kind of just gelled and healed up a little bit. We were impressed with wheat for giving at least a chance and a shot at closing up, especially in Kansas City. And you know, that was a nice thing to see because we were a little bit nervous about wheat, more than a little bit nervous after yesterday's close and after we saw the Informa numbers come out and they pegged the HRW crop at 984 million bushels. That's up 44% versus last year. That seems a little high, but their all-winter number at 1.6 billion is pretty much on the mark as far as what we're going to give the Newswire surveys next week on the estimates for the USDA report. So if you use a 2 billion bushel or 2.1 billion bushel demand figure, you're probably going to come in with around a 525 carryover for all wheat this coming year. That's up about 25%. So when we ran the numbers, saw that we were going to be up 25% versus last year, that kind of made us a little bit nervous, wondering if some other people were going to run the same numbers. But so far, it didn't seem like it did too much to the trade.
Yeah, the only thing that I've heard is that Pete Leavitt was out yesterday. Well, he'd just gotten back yesterday. He's our meteorologist on Thursday, and he'd been in the hard red winter wheat area, and he said, you know what, there was damage, but the rest of that place is going to make up for it and even more. So that's maybe one of the reasons Informa's got a hard red winter wheat number, the HRW, that looks better than most had expected. And the trade actually for the wheat was down 18.5 cents for the May contract, but they didn't seem to react too much to that news coming out of the belt. In the last couple of days, managed, in fact, to finish a penny higher in the nearby contract for the day and up a quarter in the July futures. How much of an impact do you think the size of the U.S. crop for wheat will have on the corn crop? We talked a lot about it over the Easter break or Easter time frame, as, you know, if it moved out of the feed area and into just really taking care of crackers and cookies and such and breads,
right,
that would make a difference. Are we going to look at that moving back down potentially into the corn market now?
Well, if we track with kind of like 1996 trading pattern, the lead month wheat lost from mid-April of 96 all the way into the last part, the last quarter of 1996, it lost about $2.50 to the corn, with the corn shooting up nicely in the middle of the year, and at the same time the wheat actually losing ground. And so fundamentally, that question that you ask and the big increase potentially in U.S. ending stocks, and if the dry, you know, really the northern plain of China is one of the last areas that's super, super dry right now in the world, if it gets some good recovery rains to it, then will we see a pretty big increase in the world wheat supplies? That's where you could set this spread up pretty nicely, where the corn never really gets a good crop year. Once it starts off rough, it tends to keep getting rougher and rougher and rougher, and the trade keeps, you know, buying corn and selling wheat in a psychological fundamental mindset. So we're certainly open to that type of trade, and it certainly is something that's happened in the past.
Tell me about the trade for the week in the corn market and why it is that we have a 17-cent rally here.
A lot of it goes back to the earlier part of the week. We were dealing with 360 area, you know, down in those major lows from back, you know, a month, 2 months ago, when it seemed like everything was back on track with the supply side. And, you know, the last month or two, ever since January, early February, the trade has shifted, naturally shifted from a demand-led market, demand-side market, to a supply side, because we are, after all, putting the stuff in the ground, and a lot of other people are, too, around the world. But I think today, in this week especially, we saw a lot more maybe shifting back towards the demand side, wondering if the supplies are going to be constrained enough that, oh, gosh, look at the export inspections again this week. Maybe we aren't rationing. Look at the ethanol prices. Took a big hit today, but the unleaded gas and ethanol market has had a very nice gain on the week. And so you look at that, and you look at the livestock and the fact that we really haven't dropped any weights. We did see a little bit of drop in dressed cattle this week, but dressed hogs are still running up there on the 203-pound level. You know, you look at all those things, and all of a sudden maybe some of the people are coming back around to the idea that we're not rationing enough demand, and that's really what USDA's numbers both Monday and Friday are going to be all about next week, is do we go ahead and complete a cycle shift from supply back to, hey, we need to ration demand again for the next several months, at least until we get through pollination.
The Monday report, of course, the crop progress report, and we'll get an idea of how many acres have been put in the ground and what percentages we have, and then WASDE numbers are due out on May the 11th of next week. That is Friday, yeah.
It's going to be a big week.
Yeah, so it'll be a big week in Chicago. Demand-led rallies, demand-led markets are much more stable than supply markets.
They are. They really are. It's a psychology where the traders and the funds together will come in and just buy dips. They will see support levels tested, like major moving averages or old support levels, and they will set their tone for a scaled down buying approach, or, you know, dollar cost average buying approach. And as long as the demand looks good and those macro factors look good, it can be exactly like we saw after the initial shock higher in August and September and early October. It seemed like August, September, and early October of last year was a continuation of a supply-led rally where the yield kept dropping and the corn crop kept getting smaller and smaller. Then the trade got into the ethanol groove and started saying, wow, we're going to run out of corn because of all this ethanol demand. And you saw a much more stable, steady, happy kind of marketplace where no one was really fearful of price breaks. That all shifted around the February time period.
Is the risk factor next week a satisfactory crop progress number on Monday and then something that doesn't excite really the market on Friday?
Yeah, I think that's a real good way to classify it, that the burden of proof, especially with a weaker wheat and a weaker bean market as we closed out the week this week, the burden of proof for the corn is on the bullish trader right now as we get these next two big numbers.
All right, and speaking of beans, we probably ought to talk about that. Can it manage much of a gain?
Cash is saying no. You know, we saw a big break in the CIF Gulf basis, and we saw quite a bit of basis widening when we went off the May and went to July by a lot of elevators. And so cash is suggesting to the market, don't try and overplay your hand here by getting long. So it really puts pressure on the products. If the products don't perform well and the dollar doesn't stay weak, then it would make sense to us as speculators are going to be more of a sell-the-rally type mindset in beans.
Mike's always fun to talk with you.
Thank you, Todd.
Yep, Mike Zuzulo with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, Steve Hilberger. On Jay Searles says across the two-state region, tonight in Illinois and southern Indiana, it'll be mostly cloudy. There'll be a few scattered showers, some thunderstorms as well. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy, lows will range this evening from 46 in the north to 63 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. They'll be the heaviest in the south and the west. The highs will range from 60 along the Chicago lakefront to 75 in the south. Today, the wind speeds are at 8 to 16 miles an hour. Tonight, at 8 to 16 as well. The extended forecast says showers and thunderstorms will continue right on Saturday with the greatest coverage in the west and the south. Sunshine should return on Sunday. Dave Dickey is here now with a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee has approved a major energy bill. The bill would boost biofuel use to 36 billion gallons by 2022 and reduce gasoline usage by 45% by 2030. It also mandates higher energy efficiency in vehicles, home appliances, industrial equipment, and federal buildings. It also mandates production of 21 billion gallons of synthetic fuel from coal by 2021. The measure now moves to the full Senate for debate. A federal judge yesterday has barred the planting of GMO alfalfa nationwide, ruling the government did not adequately study the crop's potential to mix with organic and conventional varieties. The permanent injunction takes effect immediately. Some 220,000 genetically engineered alfalfa acres have been planted this year. The GMO variety is produced by Monsanto. Alfalfa is grown on about 21 million acres nationwide. USDA says it will conduct a study to address the judge's concerns. The study will take up to 2 years to complete. The U.S. Senate has passed a measure by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin to step up Food and Drug Administration food regulation labeling standards and outbreak detection. Durbin says the measure calls for uniform standards of inspection.
And what we attempt to do is to have the Secretary share resources with the states to improve state food programs and help states establish standards for inspection. 50 states, 50 standards, unacceptable. There should be one scientific matrix that we follow so we know whether the product comes from Oregon or Illinois or New Hampshire, that it's safe.
Durbin's measure also would establish a consumer registry for food contamination cases. The bill imposes civil penalties on companies failing to report cases of food contamination within 2 days of discovery. A similar bill is pending in the House. Fiscal year 2008 budget conferees could meet next week to consider whether to grant additional funding for Farm Bill 2007. The House budget includes a $15 billion reserve. The Senate version calls for $20 billion. If conferees do not grant a waiver, the ag committees must find budget offsets or revenue enhancers for additional funding. USDA says Canada's latest case of BSE will not affect beef trade between the two nations. But the CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says the discovery should give USDA pause. Bill Bullard says evidence is mounting that mad cow disease is more prevalent in Canada than in the U.S., and that a Canadian feed ban designed to halt BSE has not been effective.
What it demonstrates is that the problem in Canada is far more widespread and severe than USDA ever anticipated. So USDA now needs to take far more aggressive action to protect the U.S. cattle herd and U.S. consumers from the introduction of BSE from Canadian cattle.
Canada announced its 12th case of mad cow disease Wednesday in a 5.5-year-old animal. And Democrats appear divided on whether to consider extension of Presidential Trade Promotion Authority. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is considering whether to forge a compromise that would allow extension of TPA. Ways and Means Chairman Chuck Rangel is calling for extension compromise as well. But fellow Democrat Ways and Means Trade Subcommittee Chairman Sander Levin is calling for extreme caution in any TPA extension proposal. TPA expires June 30th. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's a great one. Make sure you do that before the weekend's out. Just hit subscribe at willag.org. You can also hear Commodity Week at about 6 o'clock this evening, Central Time. It doesn't air on the radio station until 11:30 tomorrow morning. Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading will be our guest this week, and that'll be up on the website by 6 this evening. If you're out of the field and not mudding that corn in, you can take care of it at willag.org. Speaking of mudding corn in, it's something you probably should not do. We'll hear more from the Extension Agronomist at the University of Illinois. Each day that passes in the month of May, farmers lose money, or at least potentially lose money, if they do not have their corn crop in the ground. But this doesn't mean they should decide to plant into wet soils. University of Illinois Extension Agronomist Emerson Nafziger says mudding the crop in too early is a bad idea.
Well, we know that every time we pull a piece of equipment out into the field, driving over soil and so on, that we're going to do some compaction. Where it really comes to hurt us is when we do compaction, it doesn't rain very much after that, the roots get restricted, and certainly planting into wet soils can sort of start that process. Now, understanding that there's always going to be some compaction, we can manage it a little bit. But in our equipment today, and certainly our seed is better than it's been before, so that the ability of these seeds to come up is pretty substantial and kind of amazing, really. But if we do a lot of damage, if we mud corn in, we can do damage there in restricting the roots and so on that comes back to hurt us later in the season. And it's just something we don't want to do unless we're absolutely desperate and say it's now or never. I don't think we need to get that way, certainly for the first 20 days of May or so.
Nafziger says there is data that says mid-May plantings can be as productive as mid-April planting dates for corn, although he admits the odds don't favor that outcome.
But I think we still should acknowledge that corn planted in the first half of May is not so far behind. The growing degree days haven't accumulated very quickly on the corn that was planted in April, and it's coming up nicely now within about a week to 10 days when it's planted.
It means corn planted in those first days of May aren't very far behind the mid-April seedings. Nafziger says he would not worry about mudding the next set of corn acres in until about May 20. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On this Friday afternoon, we're joined to take a look at the cash grain market by the folks up at the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. Patrick Kaufman on the line today. Good afternoon to you, Pat.
Good afternoon.
How's the basis holding up in your area?
Well, we've seen an uptick in basis in the corn and bean market. Both processors are kind of screaming for beans as guys are trying to get out in the fields. And just the panic, the market had lightened up over the last 20 days, and I think the selling had stopped along with that decline.
So you've got a pretty good market for soybeans. How about for corn at this time, then?
Corn, if you want the basis, May at the processors in the local market is six under at Lafayette, up north in Hammond. They're running about option price, and your mid-state basis is 15 under the July.
Can you go through those numbers for me for the beans as well?
Certainly. Lafayette is paying 28 under. Frankfurt processor ADM is paying 28 under. Local markets, elevator markets, they're in the 40-ish, 42.
Expectations for that to widen or narrow over the next week?
Well, I think if we get this crop in the ground, it gives a little, it makes the producer feel a little easier about moving some more grain. And once the movement occurs again, then basis will weaken.
So it's just a matter of waiting out the lack of rainfall or rainfall, one of the two then?
Correct.
Okay. And then what are you hearing about demand overseas in the export market?
Pretty consistent. The export market, the exports were a little lighter than anticipated, I think, which gives it a bullish tone.
And your bids for the day there, do you have them in front of you?
Certainly. At Clymers, our ethanol plant in Logansport, Indiana, we are at 373, new crop at 353. Still showing good carry out till August and September with 14 or 15 cents. And Delphi beans are at 701 and new crop at 739.
We appreciate you being with us, Pat.
You bet. Thank you.
Patrick Kaufman filling in this afternoon for Bruce Bossert, who's away. And Patrick, of course, is with the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Steve Hilberger, the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, will join us. Right now, it's time for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. 12 people make up the first graduating class of a program that gives lower-income people a leg up on going to or returning to college. The University of Illinois has offered its Odyssey project at the Springfield and Chicago campuses before. Tomorrow, it'll graduate its first Urbana class. The program offers a free humanities course to people who meet financial guidelines. It's worth 6 transferable college credits. Governor Blagojevich says the planned renovation of a historic building on the U of I campus will be submitted for a Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design Gold certification. Fixing up Lincoln Hall will be a green project expected to cost more than $66 million. The state's share of the cost is in the next proposed budget, which has yet to pass. Indiana's Court of Appeals has ruled that Indiana public schools don't have to enroll students on a part-time basis. The decision may have a statewide impact. The ruling involved Brownsburg schools, which had refused to accept 2 homeschool students in 3 high school classes. The ruling says schools can adopt an all-or-none policy or choose to accept part-time students. The state had argued that denying students for any reason could be deemed discriminatory under Indiana law. The school district had argued that part-time enrollment would take and place an added teaching and security burden on the school, and they had the authority to make and enforce their own rules. Bank of America is suing ABN AMRO, seeking to keep alive its $21 billion deal with the Dutch bank to purchase LaSalle Bank. Bank of America had said it entered into an exclusive sale agreement with ABN AMRO for LaSalle, which the bank wants for its business in the Chicago area. The name of an Illinois soldier has been added to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, 25 years after the black granite wall was dedicated. Wesley Alvin Stuyvesant of Monticello sustained fragmentation wounds in 1971 when his base camp came under fire in Vietnam. The Pentagon determined his death in 2005 was directly related to those wounds. The founder and president of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund says a few names have been added each year since the memorial was dedicated in 1982. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580 Urbana. We're joined on this Friday afternoon by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's kind of gray, a little cloudy, some drizzle outside here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I.
Yeah, we've got a lot of light rain scattered across, well, pretty much the southern the southwestern two-thirds of Illinois, roughly on a line from near Indianapolis up to Galena. But it's pretty widely scattered, and most of it isn't very heavy. The heaviest rain has been down south in the I-70, I-64 corridor in that area. And they've actually picked up some pretty good amounts over the last 24 to 48 hours, over an inch in some places. On the downside, it's keeping producers out of the field there, but on the positive side, that has been one part of the state that's been fairly dry for the last 30 to 45 days. So they really could use the rain. And up here, we've managed to avoid a lot of the heavy stuff, which is good because we had a lot of rain last week in many areas, and things need to dry out.
And the further north we went, the more rain I think we've got. Are they looking at more rainfall this weekend yet?
I don't think we're going to see a lot more this weekend. We'll see this slow-moving low-pressure system pull out of here tomorrow. And it looks like after tomorrow morning, midday or so, most of the state should be clear of most precipitation. It'll be a nice early start to the next week. I think we'll probably have Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday being fairly dry. There might be some isolated scattered showers, but looks like we could be dealing with some more organized activity or at least more widespread showers and thunderstorms maybe Wednesday, Thursday. But even that doesn't look very threatening at this point, and it looks like we got a warm week coming ahead. So should be good weather for the most part, I think, for field work for those areas that didn't get a lot of rain.
Warm above normal or just warm?
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll see a little temperatures running a little bit above normal. Right now, this time of the month, we're looking at highs running from around 70 in our upper 60s in northern Illinois to about the mid-70s to upper 70s in the south, and we'll be running a little bit above that next week. Some of it will depend on how many clouds we get in here, but with southerly flow, it looks like things should be pretty pleasant here for the next week.
We sure do appreciate you being with us.
Okay, Todd.
And that is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign County. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Our guest this week will be Jim Bauer. If you can't wait to pick that program up, you can always do it on our website. After about 6 o'clock this evening, we record around 4:30 in the afternoon Central Time. It takes just a bit to get it posted to the website, but it's there before you can actually hear it on the radio station up at willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great weekend. Look forward to talking to you again tomorrow for Commodity Week, or at least on the website tonight. I'm Todd Gleason.